Hello, this is Adam Virgo, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm the host, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm joined by Nick Davey.
Good evening.
And our guest this week is former Football League midfielder Jason Jarrett.
Good evening.
You well, Jason?
I'm really good, thank you. I've had a good day, thank you. I've had a good Christmas and a good New Year, so yeah, I'm trying to recover at the moment. Back to the gym. It's been dreamy, but I'm trying to have a dry January.
Successful so far, or...?
No, I fell off the first hurdle. I couldn't help it. I had an Italian and a glass of wine, so I'm going to try and stick. Dry January is not possible, so I'm going to stick to one drink a weekend, and that's it, yeah.
Fair enough. Good luck.
A few questions about sort of clubs you were at, etc. I'll start off back in the when you first sort of burst onto the scene. You made your first breakthrough at Blackpool. What was it like coming through there?
You know what, it was quite exciting. I was still at school when I got told I got an apprenticeship. While I was still in school, so it probably wasn't a good thing because I completely just my GCSEs off. You know, when I was going to be a footballer at Blackpool, which is probably not a great thing, but growing up in Blackpool, I was there for 3 years. It was quite fun, you know what I mean? There's lots of them all over the country. YTS went back in the day. Being a YTS, he was a proper YTS.
I saw when you went to Bury and you made 62 appearances for them. Is that when you sort of really settled down as a player and sort of really felt like, this is going to be, I've sort of arrived on the scene, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it was the best move. Obviously, when you're young, you know, you're trying to establish, probably, I didn't go into my body at 18, 19, and I got released from Blackpool at 19. But going back to my, Bury's my hometown, club and Andy Priest being in charge, he's a former Blackpool player, and he sort of really believed in me, and he gave me a chance. And I think being back at home and living at home again, everything seemed to click into place really well, and you know, I've been a Bury supporter all my life, so it was one of my ambitions to actually play for Bury, and they really was a big stepping stone for me to go to bigger and better things.
Yeah, you say that about players playing in their sort of hometown club, and it can be like that. I mean, because I remember trying to think of just a local one. I remember Crawley, a local club was one. Crawley, they once signed Richard Brodie from York, and obviously Richard Brodie for $300,000, and obviously there was massive things expected of him in the conference, but he just couldn't settle down himself and just needed to go home. And it's obviously football can work like that, and it's all that, again, it proving that footballers are human beings, obviously, that you want to be where you're sort of brought up and everything, and homesick does apply to footballers as well.
Oh yeah, definitely can.
I also saw
it helped me, to be honest. Because some players, for example, you know, prefer going away, you know what I mean? Sometimes it can enhance another player, you know, not being at home, you know, not being around your friends and stuff, you know, getting away from some of the old friends and stuff, you know, and just concentrating on the football. But, you know, it didn't do me any harm, you know, being brought up, you know, I really...
After Bury, I saw you went to Wigan, and that's where you made 95 appearances there, and... obviously, I think that was also during when Wigan sort of were bursting up leagues up to leagues. What was that? What was it like there? I mean, that. How do you think Wigan could go all the way from like the lower leagues up to the Premier League when you were there?
Yeah, we were putting massive investment. Dave Whelan had just taken over a few years before, and I think we were in League One at the time, and you know they were spending big money. I think me and Nate Mellenson signed the same day. You know, I think we bought Nathan Ellison for £3 million or something, or two million, which is a ridiculous amount of money for a League One team. And Dave Whelan was, you know, was desperate, you know, to get all the way, and he had Paul Hewell, and you know, that was arguably the best time of my career. You know what I mean? Being at a club like that, you know, we had all the backing, but we had a great set of lads. You know what I mean? To be honest, the team atmosphere and the dressing room was the best we've ever experienced, and I think a lot of the players who played at that era, who played for that team, will say the same thing. You know, it's fantastic. Yeah.
So would you say that was your best moments of your career at Wigan?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we won two promotions, you know, and we ended up getting promoted to the Premier League. So, in such a short space of time as well, I think we had two promotions in 3 years, and such a little club, you know, to go all the way. And yeah, it was fantastic. We were very rarely getting beat. So as a player, you know, I look back on, you know, with massive fond memories at that time. Yeah.
And sort of after Wigan, I think you went to a few clubs, and sort of you, I think you had about eight, was it like, I could be wrong on the number, eight loan spells between sort of 2005 and 2009. So, what would you, were you sort of happy to be keeping going alone just to get gain time, or were you getting a bit disheartened by people getting thrown out on that? Would you like to sort of settle down with someone, or were you just say, well, grateful just been playing?
Yeah, I think it's been, I don't know if it's been highlighted that I did have some issues when I did leave Wigan. I went to sign for Norwich. I sort of instantly regretted the decision. Nothing to do with Norwich, they're a fantastic club. I just couldn't agree a new contract with Wigan. And I regretted it, and I got homesick very, very quickly at Norwich. And, you know, instead of talking to someone about it, you know, I became quite angry and quite frustrated. And it resulted in me moving on to Preston. And the problems kind of followed me around. You know, I've been quite open about this, you know, and from there on, you know, I suffered quite a bit, you know, coping with being a footballer for the next few years, and I could never really settle. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, mate. And, yeah, we'll, one club that you all know now is actually the club I support, Brighton, under, you were supported to the club by Mickey Adams. What was that like, being there? I know, obviously, it was a very, very tough sort of going into that situation where wins were just sort of desperate because they're in a very bad position, close to dropping out of the league. What were sort of your memories there? I know, obviously, when only there for about half a season, but...
It was a good, it's a good little club. It's much better now, obviously. I didn't realise how big a club it was, because I think we were still at, you know, the running track. Where the running track was around.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Withdean Stadium, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that helped. You know, being a player, it's not the best atmosphere there, was it? You know, it's not a football ground at all. And as a team, that didn't help us at all, I don't think. But it's great to see how they've kicked on now, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable how big a club they are now. I didn't realise the fan base is so big. But yeah, they were going through a tricky stage, and I don't think they had anything like the money they had invested in now, you know, if a club's sort of struggling. Yeah, and I think it's just great that they're all kicked on now, and yeah, I think it's just fantastic where Brighton are right now, you know, and you know, I'm proud that I've played down there. You know, it's a great place to live. I tell people all the time, you know, I spent 6 months in Brighton, and it's a fantastic place to live. A bit too far down south for me to stay there long term, but you know, it's one of my favourite places.
The club did obviously go on and survive. End of your career was at Salford City. What was it like playing there? Obviously, I know that I'm very well documented on the D program, but what was it sort of like there, knowing that you had like Gary Neville, Paul Scholes, etc., running the scenes there?
Yeah, I didn't really have any intention of carrying on playing, to be honest. But when they came in, and you know, when I thought the Salford the United players were going to be involved, I thought it was quite exciting. And they actually do run it in a really professional way. You know, obviously they're quite low down in the leagues, but it was good. You know, because like for example, Phil Neville would come in and take training most times. Paul Scholes would come in and join in. You know, Giggs would come in and play training. So. It was fantastic, you know what I mean? I'd played at a high level, so it didn't bother me that much, but for some of them non-league lads, it was fantastic. And like I said, they did really start to run that club in a more professional way, and they are very lucky there, you know, the Salford lads, that them lads at United are there, you know what I mean? Because they want to do things right, and they want to see big things. But it was good. You know, we got promoted in the first season, the only season I was there, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a good way to end my career, yeah. Mm.
Oh, that's good. And also, Salford, I mean, was there a lot of pressure on yourself there? Because I know you're one of the big names.
If there was, I didn't really feel it, to be honest.
Played it.
The games were interesting because basically, you know, all five United players, there'd be at least three of them coming to every game, home and away. So the games were actually quite tough because, if you can imagine, being away at Ratcliffe Borough, and Giggsy and Paul Scholes on the sidelines. The opposition, honestly, they'd run around like Batman, you know, trying to impress the United players, because you would do, because Scholes and Giggsy are sat in the stand. So every game was a tough game for us, and I think the lads at Salford did really well to get promoted, and they got promoted the season after. So I think there was a lot of pressure for some of them lads, you know what I mean, to perform. But like I said, it's I really enjoyed my time there, but it was good.
Moves on quite nicely, actually. I want to ask, because I saw that you work at DRN Sports with Gareth Seddon, who anyone who's watched the Class of 92 documentary will know who he is. I just wondered if you could tell us a bit about DRN Sports and what it is.
Yeah, it's basically just a football agency. Gareth got involved a little bit before me. He approached me in the summer. We've been for the best friends since we were 16. So a long time, over 20 years, we've known each other. And he asked me to get involved. And basically, we're trying to recruit and look after the careers of hopefully some of the young kids out there and stuff, you know, becoming players. We're a new company. And fingers crossed, we'll have to see if some of our players can actually make the grade and go on and do well. Yeah, that's my involvement in football at the moment is, yeah, trying to look after the next crop of young players.
So you're
you're an
agent then for
young... Yes, I will. I am. It's just basically because I feel like I know a lot about the game. I've had some pretty bad agents and I've had some average ones as well. So hopefully I can mentor and teach players, you know, and parents more than anything. You know, the rights and wrongs and the way to do things. And hopefully I can do a better job than some of the people out there. Yeah.
Obviously, knowing the game and playing in it, you must be well placed.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
I saw you do quite a bit of charity work as well, especially with Mind. Is that something which means something to you personally?
Yeah, I think I told you before. I've never kept it a secret about, you know, some of the issues that I had while I was playing. You know, involved in depression and stuff while I was playing. And since I retired from football, I work as a mentor and a counsellor as well. Well, I have a life coach. So I help other people who suffer from depression and anxiety and stress. I do that, and actually have a group of actors who go around the country performing a play in various companies about depression and stuff. So it plays a big part in my life, but I want to help to rid people of the stigma of, you know, mental illness a little bit. So yeah, it's something that I'm working on all the time.
That sounds fantastic. Can I just... Do you think many players within the game suffer from a mental illness? You know, like, say, in the Football League, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a hard thing to know whether it's a...
It's a hard... When we say the word mental illness, it's kind of a strong word, isn't it? But I think there will be certain players at times will be suffering from the stress of the ball. You know, people assume that having to be stressed of being a footballer, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, there's lots of people who will suffer from depression and different forms of depression, you know, stress and, you know, looking after their families, you know, when's the next contract coming, and, you know, I'm sure there's people out there who might be alcoholics or whatever, you know, other forms of depression. I'm sure there's lots of footballers out there suffering. I think we've seen it lately, you know, the last couple of years, it's coming to the forefront a little bit more where people are talking about it, and it's going to increase that.
Okay, there's just one other thing. I saw that you're a level 4 referee. I guess that from what I understand, that means you can assist in Northern and Southern Premier League games.
Mm-hmm. Yes, semi-professional games, yes.
Yeah, is that something you're looking to develop and go into, advancing a refereeing career? Or?
I'm actually in my fifth season now doing it, so it's not something I've just done off a whim. And the aim is, or was, you know, to try and get to the top, and because there's no ex-players, is there, who are referees at the moment. The PFA have been backing me, and a few others. At the moment, I'm at a crossroads a bit at the moment. I'm going to have to make a decision soon if to carry on with it, because it is kind of very slow burner, you know what I mean? It's my fifth year now, and yeah, there's a lot of politics behind it, which I won't bore you with at the moment. Very frustrating recently.
Can I just ask as well, I don't know if you can answer, what do you think of the standard, do you think the standard of Football League refereeing is good? Because I know you've seen obviously some of the Premier League, some of the red cards and stuff, we've had a lot of criticism of referees. Do you think that refereeing standard overall is as good as it could be without, you know, adding technology and the like?
I think technology hasn't helped referees, to be honest, in terms of, because we have so many cameras at games, and Sky and BT, they have a million cameras, so every time they do something wrong,
yeah,
everybody gets to see it. You know what I mean? So 20 years ago, I'm sure 20 years ago and 30 years ago, referees were still making these mistakes now, you know what I mean? But now, we weren't talking about it as much, but now everybody can have an opinion on the referee because they can see your replays, you know, Gavin Everett can comment straight away, instantly, you know, you got it wrong and stuff. So that's really not helping, but I don't know, there are some strange decisions that have been made, but, you know, I think that's the beauty of the game a little bit. You know what I mean? You know, the referee doesn't get all the decisions right sometimes, and, you know, you want it to be more consistent, but it's hard. You know, some of the players are so fast now, and, you know what I mean? And, you know, yeah, I know what you mean, but, yeah, I think they're doing a good job, to be honest.
No,
one or two who maybe shouldn't be where they are, and that's up to the people in charge to sort out, but I think the majority of them are doing a good job.
I completely agree with you. I think, you know, we can analyse all the decisions a referee makes and watch them in slow motion and that. But, like, there's decisions you watch in real time and you think straight away that's a penalty or not a penalty or whatever. And then after five replays, you're then convinced of the other way. I think it was summed up quite well in the Man City-West Ham game on BBC. There was all the pundits at half-time and Alan Shearer pointed out they were all disagreeing after all the replays. So how the hell can we criticise the referee for getting a wrong decision?
Yeah. I think it's one of the fun things about football a little bit. You know, that the referee, and, you know, people, you're not going to get all the decisions right. There's something to debate after the game and stuff, you know what I mean? But basically, if you ask average Joe on the street, average football fan, how many referees do they know, actual names? I bet they can't name more than four or five. So they're not that bond, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, these guys are actually there week out, we see their faces all the time. But can you name five referees, six referees? It's a struggle, you know, in the Premier League. So yeah, he'll complain about some stuff, but actually, he doesn't stick in line that much.
No.
Yeah.
I think Mike Dean gets all the attention at the moment.
Mike's having a good time at the moment.
Yeah. Kevin Friend.
Mm-hmm. You trying to name six, Dick?
Okay, Mike Dean, Kevin Friend, Mike Dean, Kevin Friend.
You're doing very well here, Paul.
Yeah, I know. It's called Mark Clattenburg.
Phil Dow. Craig Pawson.
Craig Pawson. He's crap. Yeah, all the ones I'm thinking of, those ones who have just retired now. Trevor Kettle, does he still do it? It was easier when I used to go to Brighton games with things. So I used to always buy a programme then, and then used to always have the refs on the back. But now I don't really buy them anymore. So. No, I think you got me.
That's what I mean. And these guys actually control the whole game. You can't have the game without them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And actually, like I said, you know, you're involved in football a lot more than probably some of the average Joes out there with a football fan. And you can't, you could go debating and you'll talk about them all the time, but you forgot about it 2 days later. You can't remember the bloody names. You know what I mean? So it can't be that important. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at V2Football and check out our website as well. You can follow Jason Jarrett on Twitter. It's at JasonJarrett01. I'll put all the details in the description. It's good night for me and good night for my guests, Nick Davey and Jason Jarrett. Good night.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Tom.